This is Sportscaster.com's Open Mic with Johnny Kane on 760 WJR, featuring sports commentary and stories brought to you by the most compelling rising stars in sports broadcasting. Here's your host, Johnny Kane.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the show. I'm Johnny Kane, your host of Sportscaster.com's Open Mic. It is Wednesday, July the 9th. Detroit Tigers have the best record in baseball. Pistons and Red Wings recently wrapped up their draft classes, and the Lions are within 2 weeks from the start of training camp. Life is good in the city, and I hope life is good wherever you are listening. Big show planned for you, heavy on baseball. It is promotion season, and three of the top four prospects in the Tigers organization are moving up a level. We're talking about Kevin McGonigal, Max Clark, Josue Briseño. They're headed from Grand Rapids to Erie to join the Seawolves, so we'll be talking to the voice of the West Michigan Whitecaps, Dan Hastie, a little bit later in the show. Also, the automated ball strike system could potentially make its way to Major League Baseball as early as next season. Are you in favor of more technological advancements in the game? We'll discuss with our panel of sportscasters. But before we talk baseball, I want to lead the show with the recent news that the WNBA is returning to Detroit in 2029. And I can tell you the interest in women's basketball, really women's sports in general, it's growing and it continues to gain momentum. I know I was happy when I found out about it. I know how important it was for Pistons owner Tom Gorris and the behind the scenes work that was being done to make this thing happen. So many of you listening probably remember the Detroit Shock. I sure hope so. That was Detroit's original WNBA franchise established back in 1996. Shock won three WNBA titles. And we don't know yet what the new name for the franchise will be just yet. As I welcome in Cody Stedman from Saline High School. He's part of the Sportscaster program and also recent recipient of the Michigan Journalist of the Year by the Michigan Interscholastic Press Association. Cody Stedman, good to have you back on the show, man.
Thanks so much, Johnny. It's really nice to see how much WNBA has increased in popularity over the past 4 years. In fact, the organization reports at least a 40% increase during the 2024 season alone compared to last year. And it's been the highest in the past 22 years, possibly because of the rookie season of Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, I think so.
They plan to expand to 18 teams by 2030, dubbing it the New Age expansion. Because we already had the Golden State Valkyries, which thankfully they were able to get a seed in. Toronto and Portland next year in 2026. And then part of that new expansion, we have Cleveland in 2028, Philadelphia 2030, and obviously the return of Detroit WNBA in 2029.
Yeah, to me, it's exciting, obviously, because of Caitlin Clark being with the Indiana Fever, and now you've got Cleveland getting back in, Detroit getting back in. So there's a real stronghold in the Midwest as far as WNBA expansion. And as you mentioned, obviously, with the Portlands, Golden State, I mean, it's all across the continental United States and Toronto as well, so north of the border. I just feel like the timing is right for everything. And the fact that they're going to get the opportunity to play at Little Caesars Arena, so you're talking about another 22-plus sporting events that will be coming to downtown Detroit. There's just an excitement around basketball. It's a passionate sports city, as we know. It's like with the NBA, with the Pistons, you know, they have three NBA championships. And now with the Detroit WNBA franchise, there is a built-in history. Yes, this will be a new team, new expansion team, but there is a history of championship caliber basketball in this city with respect to women's basketball. And to me, it's just the timing's right, the city's right, and we're all right. The fans are excited about it.
Absolutely. Even ESPN reports that the WNBA has been accumulating value for quite some time now. The Golden State Valkyries, which I just mentioned, was established this season, had accumulated $50 million for its franchise alone just by its first season. So with Detroit's ever-growing fandom and strength of Jared Goff, Cade Cunningham, Tariq Skubal, it makes sense to expand to this league here.
Well, it's 2009. You're all over it. 2009 is when the Shock, you know, it was their last season here. They were top five in attendance for five straight years, right? Now, obviously, that was not here in downtown Detroit, but you're talking about top five in attendance. If you put a winning product on the floor, teams will show up. They were number one in attendance for three straight years and had one time 22,000 plus during the WNBA finals back in 2003. So to me, you mentioned like Goff and Cunningham, some of these other sports, and I was mentioning at the top of the show with the NHL and the NBA draft wrapping up and with training camp starting for the NFL and with the Tigers doing what they're doing. Like there is room, there is there's an appetite for success. There's an appetite for a winning sports culture here in Detroit. And now, yeah, we got to wait a couple of years before it's comes to fruition. But just knowing that that's on the horizon, when these other franchises, professional sports franchises in Detroit, you know, could be at that point in time, perennial playoff teams, potentially more championships coming to Detroit. And now you bring in a brand new professional franchise. I'm stoked, man. Like, what a time to be alive, you know?
I reached out to Marty Dobek, executive director at the Detroit Sports Commission, and he sent me back this statement. The return of the WNBA to the Motor City is a major win for Detroit and a celebration for basketball fans across the region. It strengthens our city's stories, sports legacy, and creates a meaningful opportunity to elevate women's sports. We applaud the leadership of Tom and Holly Gores and the high-profile ownership for bringing this vision to life and investing in the future of women's basketball in Detroit. The Detroit Sports Commission is proud to support this next chapter and looks forward to working with community and corporate partners to help grow the game and inspire the next generation. So I guess we can all say that this movement to have Detroit in the WNBA is coming back, and it's coming back strong.
Yeah, couldn't have said it better. Marty Dobek obviously does a great job with the Sports Commission and just with bringing, you know, we talk about the Final Four coming here, the NFL draft. There's a great culture, obviously, of sports and kind of threading the community involvement within that here in downtown Detroit. And again, they just continue to look toward positive things on the horizon and a lot to look forward to with the WNBA coming back. Cody Stebman, good stuff. As always, appreciate the time. When we come back, we will have a roundtable discussion about the advent of the ABS. That's the Automated Ball Strike System. It's already in play throughout the minor leagues in baseball. Could it be something that we see in real time next year in Major League Baseball? MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred recently announced that ABS, or robo-umps, would go before an 11-person competition committee to decide. Now, the technology's been employed throughout the minor leagues. It was rolled out in spring training this year at the big league level. Is this the right decision? Is this the right direction for the game of baseball? Our panel of sportscasters today, a couple of high school baseball players with their own take on the subject, Gavin Velesovic from De La Salle Collegiate in Warren, Michigan, and Ethan Pavey from Groves High School in Beverly Hills, Michigan. Welcome, fellas. Before we go around the horn, I do want a quick table set for those who are altogether unfamiliar with the concept of what robo-umps means. So to avoid any confusion, there's still going to be a plate umpire responsible for making the initial ball strike calls. However, teams would have a set number of challenges available to dispute borderline calls, and they would use technology to determine whether or not a ball lands in or outside the strike zone. So with that said, Gavin, you lead us off. Ethan, you're on deck. Are you in favor of this implementation of the rule book?
Absolutely. I think a lot of the rules analysts and all the people have been asking for this for about 4 years now. We saw it. It was kind of a joke. The home plate umpires, you know, he really missed that one. And then people started getting screwed in playoff series. And then we're like, wow, I think it's time for a little change. And I'm totally in favor of it. I think it's time we get a little challenge in there, and maybe we'll bring up a little accountability with it. That'd be kind of nice. We haven't seen a reprimand come in years for an umpire.
I got you. All right. Well, I'm all about self-accountability in life in general, but also in the game of baseball. Ethan, your take.
I totally agree also. I'm all in favor for it. I think all of us sitting at home watching those Tigers games, and we can see the strike zone, and it's like obviously nowhere near it and 4 inches off the plate. Every human makes mistakes. And so I feel like just having that extra set of eyes, even though it's not really eyes, I feel like it would just improve the game of baseball, improve the flow, and make the fans happy.
All right, well, look, I'll say this. So technology, I think few would argue against the advances that have helped in sports. But to me, the game of baseball is perfect because of the human element, right? So Hawkeye technology in tennis for balls that are on or over the line. Obviously, we've now seen in the NFL, you know, Bill Belichick and others come to mind, you know, Andy Reid pulling out the red challenge flag, you know, and dropping it at the feet of the officials. But to me, manager-umpire disagreements, that's a characteristic that separates baseball from other sports. And relying on computer technology strips the sport of its uniquity. Okay, like fighting in hockey. You take that away, you take away a characteristic that makes the NHL unique. That's my take on the matter. So you guys play in high school. Obviously, the caliber of umpiring would be different than we see at the highest level. How often are you seeing it? And Gavin, you can speak to this because you are a pitcher. So how often are you flirting or painting black, you know, and all of a sudden you're not, you know, you're not getting the call and you're saying, hey man, we could use this here at the high school level.
Just this past weekend, I felt like no names will be said, but there were a few at the top of the zone. You know, I wish I could tap my head and turn around and let's get a 10-second challenge going. But I know that that'll obviously never come unless we go 50 years down the line. It's just there's not enough, obviously, money there. But I think ABS overall, if we could get that, you talked about the managers and all that. Managers can't challenge, so that's one good thing. So if the managers want to scream from the dugout and go home early, we can still have that unique fight going on. But I think it's important either way to get it implemented. I like it. I think the idea is great. We just got to get the backing behind it from the 11 roundtable discussion.
Yeah. Ethan?
A shout out to all the JVB umpires out there.
Yeah, boy.
I didn't play the highest level of high school baseball, but even like those umpires compared to like the varsity, there's some difference. Most of them are still in college. And so there are some calls out there that everyone in the stands on the opposing team on your team knows that it was the incorrect call. There are some words being chirped back and forth from both teams because of that call. And so I feel like even if we had like phone cameras set up and like have a way to do it like that, I feel like it would help, but they're all JV umps. So.
Yeah. Well, I took an officiating course when I was in college, actually. Mine was more toward football. You have to be wired a certain way to want to pursue that as a profession. I'll just say that much. Like you've got to be comfortable in your own skin. You've got to have thick skin. And I give a ton of credit to officials, umpires at all levels in all sports, because they really are an integral part of the game. We saw it recently in the Tigers-Cubs series. Okay, Javi Baez was ejected in one game. And again, it was a ball that was below the zone. He made the adjustment at the plate. So his first AB, he stays off the low pitch. And of course, last year, if anybody watched Tigers baseball, you saw everybody pitching low and away, sliders. And anyway, he makes the adjustment from his first AB to his second AB, lays off the low pitch. He still gets rung up, called out on strikes, quick fuse. Javi disagrees. AJ comes out. It's too late. Javi gets run. AJ stayed in the game. Next game, Nico Horner and Cubs manager Craig Counsell, they get run. And all Horner said to plate umpires, Derek Thomas that day, he said, you're having a really bad day. Okay. Now, I don't like the idea of obviously players getting run necessarily. I love watching it. I do think, you know, you've got to give guys a little bit of a leash before you just run a guy or hit the showers early. I'll say this. They rolled it out in spring training this year, okay? And teams had a success rate of around 52% on ball strike challenges, right? So half the time. And I follow an account on X, which is formerly known as Twitter. I still call it Twitter. And the overall accuracy of umpires is around 96% or above, okay? So human error is inherent to the game. That's what I love about the game. So essentially, out of, let's say in a traditional game, say you have 140 pitches. So if 133 of those, give or take, if you just work the percentages out, 133 are precise. So now you've got a handful that are on the black or just outside of the zone that could be missed according to what the exact idea of what determines a strike zone. But in my opinion, isn't that part of what makes baseball great? If you had, like, again, whether it's high school level or professional baseball at any level, let's say go from high A ball all the way up to triple A to the bigs, when you have a different plate umpire, and we won't name names, but if an umpire has a generous strike zone, pitchers can paint more. If they have a tighter zone, they've got to be a little more pinpoint accurate. So now you would have technology that determines, you know, exactly what the rectangle of the strike zone is, as opposed to what we all grew up on, which was like letters to knees and over the plate, give or take this much inside, this much outside. That's what I love about baseball. There isn't an exact specification of what a strike zone is. Am I wrong for being a traditionalist? Am I old school?
I think it gets both ways. I think the challenge system was made to where, and I think in low A or double A, they tried out a system where it was every single call was called by RoboWump. And that just did not work because it's from the middle of the plate. So if you took the plate with the rectangle, it's a rectangle closest to the triangle. That's where they're taking it from. I think it's like 53.7% of their height is the top, and it's like 19.6 or something on that. You're getting that really exact measurement. And I think that the traditionalists, you want, you know, there's not a defined strike zone. There's not something like that. We'd like it where it's kind of just general. I think you're still getting that because you only get two challenges a game. And I think it's only going to be on the really big calls where it really matters. People aren't just going to go challenge every single call. They're going to go out and say, I like this call. I'm going to not waste a challenge here. I'll let you have your generous strike zone. But when it's 3-2, bottom of the ninth, base is loaded, we can't have you ringing up my team and just selling the entire game away because you missed it by 0.065 inches. Like the last three ejections, 64 through 65, have been missed by 0.65 inches and 0.34 inches. That's how small of a margin it was. And in reality, we can't define it to that small of a space and not get rid of what baseball was originally. So that's why I like the modification hybrid challenge system.
I was going to bring up how they used it also in the minors. They were talking about how you really just need to get it into the zone. It doesn't matter how you get into the zone. You could theoretically, rookie of the year, pitch it, toss it up to the moon. And if it lands in the zone, it would be called a strike. So I feel like having those human umpires just not taking 100% of the robo ump, keep the home plate umpire behind the plate and use the robo ump when needed for teams to make sure like that it is still a fair game and it is still enjoyable for both teams and it doesn't get to a point where like the calls are getting outrageous.
Yeah, I got you. All right, you're listening to Gavin Velesovic from De La Salle Collegiate and Ethan Pavey from Groves High School in Beverly Hills, Michigan. We're talking about the automated ball strike system that is coming to Major League Baseball, perhaps as early as next season. Good, bad, indifferent. I'll say this, The Athletic, which is a publication, they released a poll here recently, an anonymous survey where they polled 134 random players, okay? I'm gonna tell you guys this, of the 134, 85 big leaguers say they are not in favor. 23 out of 134 are in favor and 26 of the 134 are unsure. So the question is it about getting the call right at all costs? Okay. One of the pitchers that was pulled, he said, taking away the human element would ruin baseball. So we're of a different age group. We're a little bit further off, Ethan, Gavin, and myself here. So we grew up in different times, right? Different ages. It was an anonymous pitcher that said that, but he said, taking away the human element would ruin baseball. I believe that. So to your point, as you were saying, Ethan, is what I wouldn't want to ever see is the game grow to a point to where you didn't have a plate umpire, where it was all just automated technology, right? I mean, if you took everything away and it was just, hey, guys, just reach back and through, and then you had no need for umpires because you had, you know, whatever, this Hawkeye technology where you had the automated zone, and then heck, all the plays in the field could be determined by some type of cameras or whatever. And I'm not suggesting that Rob Manfred wants to do that or that the game of baseball would even go that far. I don't think it'll ever go that far. But I just feel like this would be one more step toward changing the game, which I believe is perfect as it stands. If we were to poll, say, your teammates, or if you went around your high schools, what do you think baseball fans of your age group, do you think they would be predominantly in favor of this rule at the big league level?
If I took a poll from both my travel and my high school team and even across all levels, I still think I'd get around 93 to 95% approval rating. I know we're of a different age, but it's a little different. We kind of like everything where we know it's right or we know it's wrong. And we just want that confirmation. We want that knowing that everything was correct or everything was wrong.
I totally agree. I feel like if you could interview the players and then the coaches, and just the different generations, you can definitely tell the difference because I feel like whatever you watched growing up is what you're going to want to keep watching. And with not even technology and baseball, just social media and the way that social media goes over the ABS system and all of that, I feel like the younger generation is more prone to wanting something new in the game of baseball.
Yeah, it makes sense. Well, let me ask you about a couple other rules that have come out here recently and just your overall takes on if you think it's advanced the game, if you think it's the right thing. I'll just give you a couple. And then if you want to mention any one of these that might stick out to you, like the bigger bases, the idea behind it was, you know, safety concerns. But, you know, the bases I grew up playing on, much smaller than what they're using now. The pitch clock. Okay. Our most recent games, you know, they've shaved about a half hour off total game times. It used to be, I knew when I got to the ballpark, well, we get there way early anyway, but you knew you were going to be sitting for about 3 hours between pregame and when postgame would start. Now you've got the games down to a little more digestible to around 2.5 hours, give or take. And that was speed up the game a little bit, try to attract a younger audience. Mound visit limits, okay? You know, no longer can you just keep running out there and go talk to a guy. You know, they put restrictions on how many times you can go out and talk to a pitcher. They put a restriction on the number of batters a reliever faces, right? You got 3 batter minimum now. You no longer have just a special where you kept bringing a guy and then you bring in another guy and bring in another guy and these innings would bleed out. And then they've eliminated defensive shifts to create more offense as well. Do you like the implementation of those rules which have preceded what is due to come here at the ABS system?
About a few of those stick out. I'll kind of generalize a few. Number one, the pitch clock. I think even though MLB kind of sat at the 65, 70% approval rating from fans, because it's kind of an older generation still watching, but they're trying to preserve what they have ahead of them. The reality is those fans will eventually disappear out of the stands and new fans have to fill the seats. And the reality is that generations now have a shorter attention span. They really want to see action all the time. And then the defensive rules that they implemented, shorter mound visits, relief pitcher, batter requirement, bigger bases, no shifts. All of that is smart because people aren't coming out to see Zach McKinstry field a ground ball at third base. They're coming to see the home run, the single, the double, the triple into the right field corner. They're not trying to see every single ball get scooped up the middle and they're going to field it, just get the double play. They want to see action. They want to see runs. And I think that's what's important for the fan.
One of the topics that you just brought up that I thought was really important was the size of the bases. Just like we see in college ball with how first bases with the two bases next to each other, I think that's like really effective on keeping players healthy in the games. Because I know there's a bunch of clips, even at the high school level, of first basemen's running into the base runners or pitchers even running into them when they're going to try to get that out at first base. And just the safety of both players, the fielder and the batter, I feel like are very needed for a lot of these rules.
Just to quickly add on to what he's saying about player safety, they expanded the runner's lane too, you know, adding the foul line to the grass. That area also improves player safety like that. That's important. So people aren't running into each other. Instead, we can get the simplified down the line, run to first base and don't trample the first baseman.
Love it. My final thoughts on the matter, and we may be in disagreement here, and that's okay. Dissent is important in life. It does more harm than good, in my opinion. Replay review was polarizing when it was first introduced, but like most things in life, you come around to change. Rules of the game date back to the mid-1800s, 90 feet in between bases, perfect. They moved the pitching rubber back to 60 feet, 6 inches in 1893, been perfect since. Now, they did lower the mound 5 inches, I think, back in the late 60s to give the batter a better chance against the likes of Denny McClain and Bob Gibson, but it's been perfect for the last 50-plus years. I don't think teams are winning and losing based on a missed call here or there. My thoughts are be careful what you wish for. Our country's not meant to be perfect, nor are our sports. Human element, human error, that's part of the human experience. So we do want to get calls right. We want to get outcomes right, but not at the expense of losing what makes athletic competition pure and unpredictable. We as humans are less than perfect, and sometimes so are our decisions. So going to RoboWumps is like the growing trend for AI, artificial intelligence. Once you go too far, you can never go back. But I want to thank our esteemed panel of sportscasters, Gavin Valesovic from De La Salle Collegiate and Ethan Pavey from Groves High School in Beverly Hills, Michigan. Well done, boys. You know, one of my favorite voices in baseball resides in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Dan Hastie's been the voice of the High A West Michigan Whitecaps since 2015, which actually is the same year I came on with the Tigers. Super guy, very creative. Loves the game. And our Gabe Loper, an aspiring sportscaster who attends Wayne State University, caught up with Dan. Gabe, great to have you back on Open Mic.
It's a blast to be here, as always.
Attaboy. I'll tell you what, I grew up just outside of Toledo, which is AAA with the Mudhens, but there's just something special about, you know, minor league baseball and watching the kids, because they are still kids, with the big league dreams, you know, develop at the lower levels. Not everybody's going to make it to the highest of the highs, which would be here in Detroit, but there's a purity of going to games and watching those guys in their early professional baseball journey.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's always interesting the development phases because, I mean, everybody sees the final product that is the major leagues. A lot of people, unless you're, you know, close to Grand Rapids or, you know, like you said, close to Toledo, and these guys are, they're fighting for spots. They're fighting for spots on the Whitecaps team. They're fighting for, you know, looks on the major league teams. It's good quality baseball, as Dan was talking about.
You know, one of the things you and Dan talked about was how calling a game, whether it be TV or radio, just how it's evolved over the years, especially with the pitch clock, which is condensed game times.
A lot of times pacing is everything. But now with this sped up game, there's not a lot of time to convey the information, what's going on. And he gave some great insights into that and how you prepare mentally and everything else and preparation for the next pitch.
You know, it was a couple of years ago when he implemented for the first time the Masters call into his broadcast, which I just thought was fabulous. He gained some national notoriety for doing that. I just thought that's something we can all learn from about how can you think outside the box and incorporate something like a major golf tournament into a minor league baseball broadcast. All right, looking forward to hearing this conversation. Here's Gabe Loper with the voice of the West Michigan Whitecaps, Dan Hasty.
Today's guest is someone who brings baseball to life for fans across the state of Michigan. He's a play-by-play voice of the West Michigan Whitecaps and a rising star in the world of sports broadcasting. Dan Hasty, welcome to the show.
Gabe, thanks for having me.
All right. So a lot of people listen to the game, but they don't realize everything that goes into calling it. So for those who don't know, what is it really like to be the voice of the Whitecaps?
Well, it's an honor, first and foremost. I mean, when I was young, the first minor league baseball game I ever went to was a West Michigan Whitecaps game back in the very early 2000s. But I was going to games back then because I was just invested in the prospects. I was invested in seeing the future Detroit Tigers. And I remember they had Joel Zumaya on that team, who was throwing 103 miles per hour. And of course, he went on to be a huge part of that 2006 Tigers team that won the AL pennant. But to be there then and to then end up kind of coming back later on was very full circle. And one of the things that is certainly a highlight in my career, in my life, in my family's life, we love it.
So now you kind of get a firsthand look at how these prospects are doing and everything else that have been working their way up through the farm system. Talk a little bit about that and what that means to you. And that gives you a little bit of an advantage yourself when talking about Tigers baseball.
Oh, it certainly is. I mean, to be able to have the experience of getting to know the people as much as the player, you understand the DNA that goes into making them what they are, what makes them tick. How do they get out of slumps? What's their mental approach? These are the types of things that you learn only by being on the buses, in the locker rooms, with the guys. So that's one of the things that's really special about being with the team. And this year, as much as, if not more so than past years, the West Michigan Whitecaps have had some of the top prospects, not only in the Tigers system, but throughout all of Major League Baseball. So the top three hitters in the West Michigan lineup, Max Clark, who MLB Pipeline has as the number seven overall prospect in the game. Kevin McGonigal, who I believe just appeared, I think it was the Just Baseball top 100 list as the number four prospect in Major League Baseball. And then Josue Briseño, who ended up winning the Triple Crown of the Arizona Fall League at just 20 years old last October. Guys who had done some things really rarely seen in West Michigan or unprecedented in and of itself. So combine that with the fact that as we sit here, they're closing in on their first postseason appearance in almost 10 years. It's pretty special.
That's got to be incredible, especially to see firsthand everything else. And obviously you've been there for some time, watching them kind of evolve. That's got to be pretty cool. So back to kind of the broadcast side. Now, calling baseball is very different, of course, than calling basketball. Hockey kind of goes back and forth constantly all the time. So if you had one tip for calling baseball games, especially when things kind of slow down between plays, what would you tell young broadcasters?
You know, I would actually tell them, don't over prepare. You know, now with the pitch clock having become a thing over the past 3 to 5 years, people think that with baseball, there's all this open space to talk and to converse and to tell stories. And there still is some of that, but it's certainly not what it was, say, 6-7 years ago before the pitch clock came in. Now that the pitch clock is in here, the window of opportunity to tell those stories, to drop in those little nuggets that you went and you found earlier in the day during prep, that doesn't really exist nearly as much as it used to. You should still have some things. You should still have a plan. You know, every inning in West Michigan, we have an idea of something that we would like to talk about, whether that's coordinating with our production team so we can have video, graphics, photos, things of that nature. And if we have something, great. There are some times where we don't get it in because the inning just goes so fast that we just don't have the opportunity. But we also don't want to force it either. It's what comes organically as the game allows it.
That's great advice, especially, you know, for me and some of these sportscasters. You have to be versatile in calling different games and everything else. That's definitely going to be valuable advice for everybody who listens. Now, you've seen a lot of great players.
Well, the Masters call was certainly the most unexpected happening that our social media lives ever saw. That was really, really fun. Never thought in a million years that it would go as far as it did.
Hello, friends. Beautiful Saturday afternoon in Comstock Park. This is inning number 7. Still in the front 9, if you will. Eric Pinales hails from San Cristobal. It's about 30 kilometers from Santo Domingo in the Dominican Republic. Right now looking at a pitch from about 60 feet 6 inches. No idea how that one stayed out. A fine hit, deep to left center. Off the wall. Lucas Dunn into second base. Exquisite. A one-out double here in the 7th.
So that was certainly fun from more of a personal standpoint, but from just the experience of baseball, there's nothing that beats winning a championship. And I got lucky. My timing was as lucky and as fortunate as it possibly could have been. 2015 was my first year, and they won a championship that season. They got hot at the right time. And that season, the Whitecaps had a bunch of players who went on to play in Major League Baseball. Spencer Turnbull, who is now with the Toronto Blue Jays. Joe Jimenez, who was an all-star with the Detroit Tigers. And of course, he's now with the Atlanta Braves. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. I could go into a bunch more names of guys who ended up playing Major League Baseball that were a part of that team. But your first year is always very unique, very memorable, very special because everything is new. Everything is different. Everything is exciting. And you're experiencing all of it for the first time. But I never thought in a million years that I get to experience a championship in year 1.
That is really incredible. So kind of on that note, how are the Whitecaps this season? What's something, you know, we should look for, especially all the Tigers fans that listen in? What's the vibe and what's it looking like going forward?
Well, as the kids would like to say, vibes are high. I think they might be at an all-time high right now. This is a good time to have this conversation because right now, the Whitecaps are off to their best start in nearly 30 years. The last time they put up a start like this, you got to go all the way back to 1997. It has been a long time since the Whitecaps played this well, this early. And, you know, they've had years where they've played well. And they've also had years where they've had big time prospects, future major leaguers, and good ones at that. But this might be the first time that they've ever had a team with all of those future big league prospects, guys who you know are going to be playing at the major league level for a long period of time, and also seeing it with victories, with wins, with really impressive baseball being played. And then to even take it a step farther, a lot of the guys that we're talking about, Max Clark, Kevin McGonigal, Josue Briceño, we're talking about 3 20-year-old kids. You know, a couple of years ago, 2021, we had Spencer Torkelson. He was the first number one overall pick to ever come through West Michigan. And he got off to a little bit of a slow start, but then things clicked in and then nobody could get him out. He was probably the biggest destroyer for about a good 6 week run back in 2021. But he did all that as a 22-year-old because he was a college pick, no fault of his own. But now you look at Clark, McGonigal, Briseño, all three of them are putting up video game numbers, and all three of them have yet to be able to legally purchase an alcoholic beverage. They are all 20 years old. They're doing it far earlier than we saw even a guy like Torkelson do it. And now you look up at Tork, and he's in the top 10 in Major League Baseball in runs batted in. He's starting to finally find his groove. And we saw that at every level of the minor leagues for a guy like Spencer, where it just took him a while to figure it out. And now in the major leagues, that storyline is playing out. But that's the exciting thing, is that they are prospects who are playing well. They are impacting winning, but they're super young. And that's why it makes it different.
That's different. And that's exciting. Exciting indeed. Mr. Hasty, I hope another championship is coming to you guys very, very soon. Thank you so much. This has been Gabe Loper, Dan Hasty here on Sportscaster.
Dan Hasty, great voice, great guy. We learned just this week that the trio of 20-year-olds that he mentioned, Kevin McGonigal, Max Clark, Josue Briseño, all promoted to AA Erie, so one step closer to the major leagues for three of the top four prospects in the Tigers organization. That is a pipeline, ladies and gentlemen. And that is going to do it for this week's show. We will talk to you again next Wednesday night for Sportscaster.com's Open Mic right here on WJR.